Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Mean Green Nation podcast. And, you know, I'm beginning this episode right now, and Aldo's looking at me with a confused face. I'm not sure what. What's up, Aldo? How's it going?
Okay, sorry. My headphones.
Oh.
The mic got switched to the headphones.
Oh, sorry, okay. Yeah, I wish I had a time-lapse camera of Aldo's, like, setup. Like, it just kind of, like, every week it goes to the internet equivalent of Radio Shack. He just ordered something on Amazon now. Nobody's going to get the Radio Shack thing anymore, huh? Like, in, like, 2 years. Like, everybody's born in 1998 now, which is weird. Folks, speaking of thinking about kids, I guess, our favorite little football program signed themselves, what was it, 19 new children to play football. Is that about right? Is it 19? They count that right? Yeah.
Looking at 24/7 says 19.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot to talk about, and we'll jump right into this thing. We talked a little bit about this previously when we mentioned the December day when we signed the bulk of this class. Well, we didn't sign it when Seth Luttrell signed the bulk of his class. And we'll discuss a little bit more right now. That's what we're going to talk about. So let's get into it. The February signing date happened, came and went. It was a lot more muted than in years past, and that's understandable considering everybody was signed in December, right? So, like, it was a little shorter, it was a little quicker. Even the other schools, the bigger schools, the ones, you know, the Alabamas, Texas, Ohio States, the P5 schools of the world, they, you know, had smaller classes. There was still the signing day drama. Somebody's mom stood up just because she was overwhelmed, and everybody made a big old deal about that.
She thought was so mad.
Yeah. I mean, she didn't give him a hug. She was just like, I can't, you know, deal with this. I don't want to. That happened. You know, some big-time recruits flipped. I think Alabama lost a couple of people last minute. Georgia stole some people. On our side, there was a little mini-drama. We had a couple of people commit and then, like, say, never mind. Well, at least one person was intending to come visit North Texas, and then he went to go visit SMU. That happens. It's fine. Lots of people do that all the time. I'm not going to make a big deal about it because it's not that big a deal.
Part of the process.
Yeah, it is part of the process. We've done the same thing to other schools when we were the beneficiary. Recruiting is odd because it is a numbers game, right? You want to get a lot. You want to take a high volume of good players because time and circumstance happen to them all. You know, bad luck happens. Some guys don't project you. Like, wow, this guy's amazing. You know, he looks amazing right here at 18, but then he doesn't really have too much room to improve. And you get another guy, and he's like, he looks all right. I mean, we can work on him. And then it turns out his ceiling is unreachable. It's just so high. He just keeps growing, keeps getting better. And you're like, well, this guy's like an NFL player. Might be a Hall of Famer. Who knows? And you didn't really see that in the early stages. So the idea is to get enough good guys so you can fill out the roster. You need about 100 dudes, right? 85 on scholarship, but you need about 100 to do everything that you need to do in a football program. And Seth Luttrell said that they're getting right where they need to be. They're getting there. They have the numbers on offensive line that they want, 17, 18 guys. You and I mentioned this and talked about this on a previous show episode that you need dudes, you need just bodies, you need the next year's version. You don't want to rely on JUCO guys all the time to be like the bulk of your starters. One or two, yeah, here and there, yeah. But you want to get a guy in as a freshman, have him sit, get in the weight room, get in the buffet room, and develop into the lineman that you need him to be. And, I mean, that's it. There's my little preamble. Aldo, what did you think of this class? What was your preamble, I guess.
I mean, it's more of a amble and less of a pre, but it's just, I mean, it's the third class of Seth Luttrell. We kind of gave him a pass on the first one because he had a month to fill out an entire one. He only had one guy signed by the previous one. There was still tons of holes in this roster. They're still in that rebuild process, trying to get that to that 85 because I don't think we're still at the 85 mark yet in terms of scholarships. So it's that time, that grace period for giving him a pass on what kind of class he's building is coming to an end, and now we can really start critically looking at you know, their recruiting methods, recruiting process. Last year we saw that they were attacking on offense, trying to fill as much stuff as possible, offensive line, wide receivers, those special offensive positions. And this year, the focus was on defense. And I appreciate what they were doing in the recruiting process, on who they were targeting. I think there were a total of 11 linebackers and defensive backs. And as I was looking through, and there's a few things that I want to touch upon. We'll talk about in a minute, but you know, the types of guys we were getting in December versus February, and you know, the types of safeties we were getting, because our top three in terms of ratings, our top three guys were safeties. And when you look at their film, and you know, they're moving some from safety to linebacker, these are just athletes. And it's kind of like that Gary Patterson method of just get the best athletes you can find and put them wherever they fit. And it looks like that's what they're doing. And I can appreciate that process. And we're, you know, I don't know if we're beating guys like Indiana, because some of these guys had plenty of P5 offers, or because of the December signing, if we're benefiting some offers driving up in February. So those are some of the things that was going through my mind. And you know, it's more of an appreciation rather than I feel great about this class. It's not a bad signing for sure. I won't take that away. But I feel like confident, I guess.
Yeah, I agree mostly with you. I think I don't really see the we focused on offense, now we're focusing on defense before. Some of that is just who signed. I mean, you know, last year, Jalen Guyton was the star of the class, right? He was the 3-star, but I think what 24/7 had him as an 8.571. And then this season, our number one signing is Alec Morris. He's an 8.38. That was his rating on what you call it. But we offered a couple of better receivers, I guess. I mean,
sure.
Yeah, Austin Ogunmakin. He's a 3-star. He's a lower 3-star. I mean, he didn't get an offer from Notre Dame. You know, I mean, he didn't transfer from Notre Dame. So he's a little bit of a regular signing, just under the radar. And I think some of that is about perception. I don't think you're wrong. I think, you know, maybe you just see it the other way we focused on it. But I do agree with you that we got some athletes in here, and that's what we need. I mean, the trend defensively, really everywhere, has been towards less of a this is a running play and this is a passing play to this could be anything at any time. It's what Joe Tiller at Purdue called it, basketball on grass, and that was 20 years ago, right? The spread offense has revolutionized the game, and then there's a revolution within that revolution, which is, you know, what we see now. Instead, it only makes sense, right? Football has always been about deception, and it's new, and it's also a circle. Like, you go to the line, and you're like, we're going to run it left. Okay, cool, let's run it left. Then you're like, all right, well, how about in the middle of play, we just make a decision at the line to see what happens? Or like, you know, if they're stacked up on the left, then we'll run it right. Okay, let's do that. And then they're like, well, they're kind of guarding both. What if we snap the ball and then decide where to go based on what the opportunity is? I'll fake it, and if it looks good, I'll hand it to you. Well, on the fullback dive, if not, I'll keep it and I'll run around the end. Okay, let's do that. We'll add an option at the end of that, so it'll be triple option, right? Like, this has all been the case. And so when you see RPOs, right, run pass options, you're like, wow, it's revolutionizing the game. Yeah, but it's the same thing. It's still like a triple option, you know? It's really just a double option, but I guess there's like a triple to it. So it's cool. It's new, but it's the same. And
so are you calling it, is it like a la carte football then?
Well, I mean, it only makes sense, right? Like, it's always silly, you know, if you remember like earlier versions of Madden, right? Like Madden 2000 or something like that. Madden 95, I played Madden 95. Like, you called the play, and I was like, oh, my brother's in the play, the defensive play that can stop this play, and there's no way to change it, right? And I remember, fast forward a few years, like Madden 2004, when Mike Vick was on the cover, and really every play had an option of Mike Vick just running around and doing things. depending on how I decided to guard it. It's really just the best thing for the situation, right? I mean, why get locked into a play like we did in Madden 95? We're like, well, all we could do is flip the play, but we're still running it, and he's going to stop this run. There's nothing we could do. Like, why go into a situation where you know you're gonna lose? It used to be, when I was growing up watching football, playing football, that the coach would be like, all right, you got to check out of a play that's bad to a play that just okay. Like, that's not going to lose us yards. Like, well, look at that great job by that quarterback checking out of a play that's definitely going to lose yards to one that's going to gain nothing. Like, that's – how about we check out of a play that's going to lose yards to one that's going to get us a touchdown? You know what I mean? It's just a being – just take all of it. We're kind of getting off to the side here, but it's all new. So you need athletes. You need a guy that can play defense and he can play – I mean, he can play the run. Sorry, defense. You can play the run. And he can play the pass. I'm over here thinking about basketball. He can play defense, play offense. But watching too much conference USA basketball. You see my point. That was a long tangent around to get to the point that, yes, I agree with you, Aldo. We need safeties that can play the pass, and they can play the run, and they're smart enough to recognize what's going to happen. All at the same time. And, you know, I like these guys. Is it Morris? Safeties, 6'1", 188. Reggie Williams. Shorter, 5'9", 174. Kevion Davis, we talked about him. Bigger size, 6', 195. He's maybe a linebacker.
Yeah, that's the guy that they're moving to linebacker. But a guy like Reggie Williams, who's 5'10", 180, you know, you have to think, are they going to move him somewhere else? Is he kind of small for a safety?
I mean, yeah, I think I like him at one of the two other safety spots, right? What do they call it? The star.
Rover.
Yeah. I forget now off the top of my head. You know what? I have it right here. It's basically
but I mean, like even
hybrid,
more dramatic.
Yeah.
Even more dramatic, like putting him on offense.
I don't know if they're doing that. I mean, maybe. Is it bandit backer? I forget. They call these things all different things. I don't know. There's options everywhere. And I like this class. I think, and this may be me being a homer, right? But let's be homers for a second. This is a Mingry Nation podcast, right? It's not super objective podcast. So let's be homers a little bit. I read this week about, what's his face? Chris Peterson at Washington. Hasn't had really good classes, like 18, 13, 15. You know, for a power five, you're like, you know, Washington's not getting anybody. But they've always had a good defense. They've always been able to develop guys. And you mentioned Gary Patterson being able to identify somebody that has potential and then seeing exactly what they could be. That's invaluable. I don't know if our staff has that skill yet, right? We're not going to put them in the same conversation as Chris Peterson, Gary Patterson, or those guys, because we haven't seen it yet. At least, definitely not defensively, right?
It's too early.
Yeah, it's only been a couple years. So we're hoping that they see a guy and we're like, I don't really see what you got here. You got a defensive end. Don't we need defensive tackles? And then that guy turns into a monster defensive tackle and we have one of the best run defenses in the nation or something like that, right? That would be the ideal development path. I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if Seth Luttrell has a master recruiting plan that he's keeping from all of us, and we don't know that secretly, you know, in 2 years we're going to have the best team that the world's ever seen. I don't know that. I think the other side of it.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, on the other side of it, you have some criticisms, and I think it's important that we address those. And we can get to those maybe after your point here. But that people are like, look, we're not recruiting well. We're like eighth or ninth, depending on how many you count from UAB, right, on 24/7 sports rankings. It's not good. I mean, and there's like the difference between a position and another position, right, 8, 9, 10, even 7, 6, 5, are very small. It's like one guy, right? But, I mean, that's also the difference in the game. A lot of times it's one guy, right? We're like, you know what? We had everything schemed up, but their one guy beat our one guy, and that's the difference. That's what the Jimmys and Joes that Brett Vito likes to overuse, right? But it's true. It's one guy. That's the difference. So Yeah, it's true. We haven't been recruiting like FIU and FAU, and we're in Texas, right? We want to see, like, hey, we got talents, big. Everybody says the same thing. Dallas-Fort Worth area is amazing. A lot of talent. We got to recruit here first, right? We got to own Dallas-Fort Worth. Everybody says that. Sonny Dykes said that at SMU. Everybody says that. And I don't think we've done it to the extent that everybody would like to have seen, right?
What was really successful.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to go back to the point of, yeah, you know, we've seen what Latrell has done, and he's definitely not going to be grabbing those superstars, but he is going to be getting, at least on offense, difference makers, at least in the context of the team, guys that were better than the previous guy, guys that add more explosiveness, guys that are putting up stats, and stats being a good thing, because before it was below average, and now we're actually hitting average to above average. So on offense, you know, I'm pretty, I can feel confident for them identifying guys. Now, that brings up the question on defense, since we've had so many issues there, trying to plug holes, both literally on the field and on the roster. You know, we're grabbing five linebackers or six or whatever, and five or six defensive backs. Is that because we are identifying talent, or is it because we're scatter shooting and we're trying, like you said, you know, one guy out of six will make it to the field and actually make a difference? So I guess that's, for me, it's still up in the air, because I don't know. I haven't seen enough of their defense. You know, we had a lot of seniors, I believe from the McCartney era, and some JUCOs from early Littoral area that graduated. And now I think we're going to finally start seeing some of the talent that they were identifying. And in this class, the guys that I'm excited about, I think, is Dayton LeBlanc and Derek Shaw. LeBlanc, I think, is a tackle, but they might put him at defensive end. Shaw is definitely a defensive tackle. So I don't know. And I think you were saying that you don't think we would see them soon, just because on defensive line, we've been making it work, but these are the guys that I'm excited, hopefully, to see sooner rather than later, you know, within two seasons at least.
Yeah, you know, so you made a lot of points there. I think we can start with, like, the scatter shooting one. You know, like, you always want to do the rule of three, right? You want three, like, out of three recruits, right? You want to say a third are going to be, so one is going to be like a starter, maybe all conference level. That's your hope. And then the other guy, he's going to be, you know, just a solid contributor, maybe start senior year, but, you know, in the previous years, he's a backup, a good backup. He does good. And the third one, you're like, hopefully he's just on the roster, you know, like, hopefully he stays around, but, you know, he's probably going to just quit or leave, or maybe doesn't contribute at all, right? That's the ideal kind of breakdown. And, you know, this is from what Dan McCartney said, but it's like an old saw, right? Obviously, you'd rather have all three of them be amazing, right? But if you can't, then you're just hoping for that spread there. So, I mean, the thing is, like, so if you have a three-star guy with a lot of talent, and he doesn't live up to his potential and become an all-conference player, maybe an all-American or something like that, you want him at least on your roster. And it's great to have a guy being able to plug in. And we've talked about this before. You know, you want some depth. And you heard Seth Luttrell talk about, they don't have enough depth. And, I mean, there's guys on the roster, but they can't play. This guy can't play. You know what I mean? He's not ready to play. He's not going to do anything on the field. He's really not at the level. You want guys that are at the level, ready to play, and can contribute positively. And we're getting to that point, like you said, on offense. We've got the receivers. Now you can say, before, you're like, maybe we have one, and everybody else, there's a lot, big question mark. Can they run the routes? They're running the wrong routes. Maybe they're not doing the right things. They get kicked off the team. Or they have the talent, and you look at their stats, they don't catch anything, right? You know, last year we had some injuries on the you know, Jalen Guyton got injured. Rico Bussey was injured in the beginning. But we were still contributing. People were still catching the ball. And we had some guys, you know, obviously Mike Locke jump in there and lead the team in receptions. Or did he lead in receptions? Receptions and yards?
I think it was receptions and Guyton led in yards.
Yeah, I think he passed it towards the end because of the bowl game. But you see my point, right? It's kind of deep. You're like, well, yeah, it keeps going. You can spread the ball around. Defensively, we don't have that. I mean, obviously, our best defensive tackle in talent, in reputation, Bryce English, still hasn't seen the field. And a lot of questions there, right? No depth. We had, at one point, we had a defensive tackle kicked off the team, and you could see everybody struggling. We look like we don't have enough guys. So
yeah, we had to burn Richards there this season because of injuries.
Yeah. So not ideal, right? We're building up the depth there, and we're limited. Obviously, we'd like to do like a UAB and bring in 80 guys and just fill them all in. And maybe they change the rules where that's possible. But right now, you get 25 dudes, 25 scholarships. Is it 25, 24? 25 scholarships per season. And then you have to make the most judicious choices you can, you know, in a recruiting cycle period under a particular set of circumstances. Like you said, you got a month to go. You're looking at your team. You're like, all right, who can play, who can't play? Who can I get, who can't I get? You know, every call that you make is a call that you're not making to somebody else that you might get. You have to make a lot of choices. It can be intense, right? Like, here's a big, tall dude. His numbers look great. Is he the kind of guy that would fit here? Do we want to take a risk on this guy, you know? Do we go for this guy who we know is going to sign here, but maybe he's not as talented? I have, you know, an hour. Who do I call? Do I call them both? Am I splitting time? And one feels like, yeah, you're not really recruiting me hard enough. There's a lot of decisions to make. And even
you know, deeper down, you know, am I going to give him a preferred walk-on offer or just a walk-on offer?
Yeah.
Do I want to hold on to him or you know, risk losing him?
Yeah. And everybody's making these things. And, you know, like, I'm not making excuses for them. I'm just trying to communicate so we can understand exactly what we're doing. Like, I didn't get a good. What does that mean, right? What do they have to do? So I think other people are a little bit less forgiving about the first class than I am. But I think it's very possible to come in and recruit well right away. And you're like, look at Jimbo Fisher out there. Like, Jimbo Fisher has the full weight of Texas A&M football, which is a, you know, huge success, right? You don't have to go out there and sell Texas A&M to anybody, right? You can say, look, we had Heisman it's winner.
National championship.
Yeah, you don't have that national championship, but you have all the other stuff. They had a Johnny Manziel out there. You can do it. It's like, hey, you're saying my Jimbo Fisher can sell it.
Jimbo, yeah.
Jimbo Fisher has a national. He's like, I coached a Heisman guy. Texas A&M had a Heisman dude. I mean, you can too, right? So it's a little bit easier sell than it is at North Texas coming in. Like, well, we lost to Portland State, embarrassingly so, you know. And if you don't know that, maybe I shouldn't have told you about that. Yeah, it's a different sell. So I don't, you know, like, I don't want to compare directly to those kinds of schools because I don't think it's an imperfect comparison. So to your point about Derek Shaw and then LeBlanc, is it Matt? What is his name? Dayton LeBlanc. I wanted to call him Matt LeBlanc, and I was like,
don't worry.
So Dayton LeBlanc, 6'1", 265, son of a coach, son of a defensive line coach. You like his technique. You need to have technique, great technique, if you're the son of a coach, right? It would be pretty awful if you didn't have great technique, and here's a coach that's supposed to teach you technique. You're like, you didn't even teach your son, guy. What's going on here? So, you know, son of a coach, he's going to know all the stuff he's been seeing in his whole life. That's great. That's what I like about him. I don't know how much of an amazing athlete he's going to be. Even if he plays end, that's fine. One problem with North Texas and one problem with Texas in general is that we don't have those big old defensive lineman type dudes growing on trees out here like they do in Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia. Because they're just everywhere over there. Like, everybody's like, look at this defensive line. Like, all of the amazing NFL dudes come from, like, Mississippi or the South. And then, you know, maybe one or two from Texas or just randomly someplace in Iowa. So you don't see that a whole lot. You see maybe great athletes, but not like just, here's this guy. He's, 6'3", 300 pounds, runs like the wind. And he's going to play defensive line for us, right? We don't really have that too much. Because aren't both the 4-star defensive tackles for FIU from, like, Mississippi or something like that? I'd look it up.
I don't know. They probably transferred over from Alabama.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know at least one of them transferred over. While I look this up, tell me why you like LeBlanc.
Well, I like Shaw. Okay, well,
why you like him too, yeah.
He's got, I mean, he still needs some development, LeBlanc does, but he's got the strength and, like, this mean streak about him. He's always slipping through the offensive line. He was fun to watch on a, you know, the huddle tape, whatever you could find. Derek Shaw, though, he looks mean. Like, he's always in the backfield. He's always stripping, or he's always ripping through offensive linemen. That guy, I want to see play soon, just because I want him to be successful. Like, I'm watching him, and I'm already like, he's my guy. He's my guy. if you watch his huddle film, it's he's a strong dude. I mean, he's only 6 foot, but he's athletic, I think, and he's aggressive. So, you know, in terms of D-line, it's all that you can ask for a team like North Texas. Not to knock the guys that are there right now, but like you were saying, we've got a limited pool to start with here in Texas, and you know, you've got to convince these guys that are harder to recruit, just because, you know, maybe a team like SMU comes in, or that has, for some reason, a little bit more highly regarded, or TCU comes in, you know, because they need the depth. A guy like that, who would be a backup at TCU and be a starter at North Texas, you know, what are they going to choose? They're going to choose the school that will get them a better opportunity to get drafted. You know, we haven't had a guy drafted here in over a decade.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I would think it's an easy choice to go to TCU to get a chance to eventually start, versus a place like North Texas that doesn't get the type of spotlight. So my point being, it's frustrating to not be able to instantly grab that kind of talent. But when we get a guy like Derek Shaw, it makes me excited that at least we can identify a guy that nobody else identified first.
Yeah, it's good that, you know, he's from Oklahoma, right? Small town Oklahoma. We got that to sell him, because we got small town guys from Oklahoma coaching us, right? I was wrong. Like, what? They're not from Mississippi. They went to like a Mississippi college or something like that. But one of them was from Philly, and the other one's from Texas. So, you know, there I am being wrong, or at least a little bit wrong. So, back to my point. I like these dudes. They look a little smaller. 6 foot 260. Yeah. I don't know how he matches up against, say, Conference USA's best, right? Like, say, you know, Willie Hernandez type dudes, UTEP. But, you know, I think he can be good here. I agree with everything that you said about these guys. I like Alex Morris. I think he has good ball skills in the huddle highlight film that we saw. They know more about this guy than I do. Right? I'm not going to pretend like I know everything just because I watched some huddle film. So take everything we say with a grain of salt. Tim Faison, 6'2", 225 from Tallahassee, Florida. He's a JUCO guy. I like that size. It's a good linebacker size. Linebacker is a need position. We absolutely need linebackers.
I think he's a good fit too.
Yeah, it looked like, I mean, he looks like a big dude that can, you know, stop the run, right? This is what we need, the runs up the middle. Florida Atlantic, Iowa, Troy, they all did whatever they wanted against us running the ball. And I know we did well. Like, I mean, we executed well defensively. But at some point, you know, we need a wall back there, somebody to be a wall, somebody that doesn't need to exert all the effort to make a tackle on a 225-pound running back. If you meet him with 225 pounds, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's only so much technique can do to win a head-to-head battle like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you were concerned about the likes of Troy and FAU running win and how they won it against us in certain situations, then, you know, you look at a guy like Faison, that's a great get. JUCO guy, so he's a little bit developed. He's not a high school dude. That's good. Who else did we get? He was the only linebacker in this signing period. Let's talk about Thomas Preston, offensive line, 6'4", 290 from Arizona, transfer, Scottsdale guy. he looked like he moved. He looked like he was strong. He was eating up all the community college guys, the JUCO guys. I mean, and
yeah, there's not too much insight I can give on linemen, on offensive linemen.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, I mean, like I'm totally off on like hand placement and other things that you want to do. I'm not the guy to talk to about offensive line. He looked strong. He looked like he could move, and that's good, right? We like to pull our linemen. And, you know, talking about run-pass options again, you need your linemen able to look like you're running and also kind of pass block on something, depending on what you're running, right? Like, they were talking about the Eagles. The right side of the line was pulling like it was an outside zone, and the left side of the line was dropping back like it was a pass play. And you need stuff like this. So you need to be intelligent. You need to be strong, kind of quick. And, you know, light on your feet, be able to move.
Which is an issue we've had with in the past with our tackles.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to call out Jordan Murray here. He's everybody's favorite target. But I was watching the bowl game again. The first play when Mason Fine gets sacked and fumbles, we were doing a play action play. And Jordan Murray was supposed to pull, get over, get the block. And he didn't, and that's the guy that came in and immediately destroyed Mason Fine. Mason Fine then fumbled. They got the ball. They're up 14-0 or 13-0, right? There's an example of where and how we need some pull, some movement along the line. We'll see what he could do. I mean, I think this is another example of filling out the offensive line. You always need to take one or two, maybe more, three or four. The line is the most important part of football. So it's good to see us get an offensive and a defensive dude. I know you were high on Jair Shorter. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
Oh, no, that's fine. Yeah, I really like his. I mean, he's 6'2", 215 pounds, and he's got speed. So it's we're lucky that we were able to land a guy like with his talent. I mean, he's a P5 dude. Playing for us, I when you're watching his film, I mean, because that size is he's got 13 offers. I'm scanning his offer list real quick.
Yeah,
he played tight end in high school just because he was so big, but he was just running go routes, and he's got good enough feet at the high school level to do like double moves and outside runs. So, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to start right away, but he is going to compete for time within the next couple of seasons. You know, I don't know if we beat guys like Houston, but he has offers from Houston, all the way down from teams like Louisiana Lafayette, Sam Houston to UTSA and Abilene Christian. So a lot of teams were looking and thinking the same thing we were. And, I'm excited to see how he performs for us.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, he's a big body. And, you know, that's useful in a lot of different things. Wide receivers in our offense, are expected to run routes, catch the ball, right, make a play. You need a big body to catch the tougher ones, just to kind of be a guy to jump up there and catch it. But also in a run game, they're good for the other guy, the guys that set the pick, you know, the guys that clear out for other dudes. That's also what you need. And you need size and strength out there to do the wide receiver screens and all that other kind of thing. At the very least, if you can do that, that'd be great. You got to see him play, though.
You're setting the level real low.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, I think he looked like a tight end out there, catching the ball and, you know, being bigger and stronger than everybody. I think what's important in this offense is that you catch the ball. Like, you don't need to be super fast in this offense to catch the ball. You need to be able to run routes and run smart routes, like recognize plays. Like, it's not just like, hey, take run five steps and then sit, right? It's not all that. It's run, see where the open spaces are, and then sit and then make a catch. You know what I mean? So seeing where the open spaces are is usually where like receivers kind of get messed up in this offense. You're like, this guy's real fast, but he doesn't ever know where he needs to be. He's running bad routes, right? And you're like, what? Why did we have him run like a streak right here? Well, we didn't. We told him to run and go over the linebacker and under the safety, and he just kind of ran. You know what I mean? He got in the way, and that's why nobody was open. He actually made the X receiver not come open because he ran a bad route. You know, like that kind of stuff happens. I'm not saying he's going to do any of this. I'm just saying that we'll see what he gets. I mean, he has the size. Yeah.
You're already setting up for failure. I'm not taking this personally or anything. But no, I think skills-wise, excuse me, I think skill-wise, he's, you know, he can win 50-50 battles. That's something we need over Rico Bussey. You know, you were surprised that with somebody with his size, he's not winning those 50-50 battles, but he doesn't have that dynamic ability that, that Rico has. So he's definitely a, just an outside receiver, strictly outside receiver. And yeah, like I said, we don't know how he'll compete in at the college level, but I think he'll be. I've got high expectations for him.
Yeah, I mean, so like a guy like a 6'2", 215 dude that can run and catch, right? You're like, okay, what can we do with him? First thing they'll do is teach him how to run a go, right? It's the number one, right? You'll just run a go. He'll run a go, like stay inside the numbers or the towards the middle of the field, give your quarterback some room on the outside, and they'll throw it up to him. And I'll tell you what, if he's catching those against the guys we have, then he'll get playing time. You know, he doesn't need to run anything more complicated than that. We'll just have him run the go, the backside go route, the peak one, the one that we just take a peek at, or the one that we're looking first. We're like, you know what, he can't do anything else, but if he can run that and make a catch over his Conference USA cornerbacks, he's going to get lots of playing time. And then they'll have to look at him, the defense will, they'll have to count for this guy. We're like, he can win a one-on-one battle out there. Even though we have a guy, we'll have to move dudes around, maybe roll a safety his way, and that opens it up for Mike Law across the middle, everybody else, right? But if he can't catch those, then we're like, well, guess we don't need to guard this guy. We can put our worst corner on him. And probably he's not going to get any time. You know, ideally, you know, when we need somebody to stretch the field besides Jalen Guyton. We need somebody on the other side. You know, Turner Smiley was great. He was getting a lot more time on the outside. Rico Bussey, you know, he's a deep threat. But, you know, like you were saying, you kind of like to throw it to him short and then let him run after, even though he did catch a couple streaks. You know, it's not number one.
His game is the yards after catch ability. Yeah. And you need to use that because he's got – he's probably the best yards after catch guy we got because of his strength. Like, he'll break tackles versus a guy like Darden or Mike Law who will have a harder time breaking tackles.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully, yeah, everybody here has his strength, and you hope to fill him out to make him a complete wide receiver, right? You look at Turner Smiley. His first couple seasons here, he wasn't really too good at much else but running really fast down the field, and we just throw him the ball deep. And that's fine. You can build around that. And you look at him towards the end of his career here, he was more of a complete wide receiver, and that's good. It tells you, you know, we got guys that have played in this offense, guys who have had time in the NFL, you know, quarterbacks that have thrown to really good wide receivers that have played in the NFL, and they can tell you, hey, look, this is how Michael Crabtree would do it, right? So that's pretty good. It's pretty good advice. And Turner Smiley, to his credit, put in the work, got better, and it got to the point when you can throw the ball to Turner Smiley anywhere on the field, and he was a threat to take it all the way, not just run deep on pass people, which was still his strength. So that's kind of what I'm saying about Shorter. I don't expect him to come in and catch 115 balls and, you know, 70 yards.
Sure, yeah. But I do want to give a shout out to Joel Filani and Tommy Maynard for improving these guys' receiving ability.
You saw that catch? That's great podcasting duo there, because I forgot their names. They had them on the tip of my tongue. And look at Aldo over here jumping in. That's good teammates. Yeah, he has – Shorter has prototypical outside receiver size. He didn't have an offer from UTSA. I don't know how much I look at that and say that's great, because I think UTSA just – I don't know. They don't have good offense, so it's kind of hard to be like, hey, look at that offense there in the bottom of the standings. They offered this dude. Like, Houston, maybe a little bit more. You know, maybe, okay.
Well, and I think some of it is like, they in previous years, they were getting those big, giant dudes, those good receivers, and I'm blanking on that guy's name, that receiver's name that I was whooping our butts. Why can't we get those guys here?
Yeah.
In a school that passes twice as much as they do or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. he's like for any, you can find a role for this guy in any offense, from our offense that we just, you know, go four wide as our base set, to even a pro set, right? You can use a 215-pound 6'2 receiver to run a post and then also to block. And that's one thing that stood out to me on his film, was that he finishes a lot of blocks. I mean, they ran a little bit different offense than what we run, but, you know, you could see him crushing safeties, you know, blocking outside. And that's good. That's a complete football player. He's not afraid of contact. That's a great thing already. And we have pretty good running backs, and we're going to hand them the ball, you know, a couple hundred times. And it's great to have Shorter out there beating up on cornerbacks. You know, that's good. He's a good football player. I like that. I think we covered all of the February additions, yeah? Talked about Preston, offensive lineman, Shaw, Shorter, Morris, Faison. Do you want to touch on the previous class a little bit? The Hunt, Nixon, Saafi, Dayton LeBlanc. You talked about him already.
Yeah, we talked about LeBlanc a little bit. The guys that I like most is offense, obviously, just because I have a little bit better, you know, understanding of the offense.
Yeah.
So Cason Martin and Jason Bean will be good additions. Martin, I'm excited for. You know, he's pretty raw. He's got some technique stuff that he's got to work on, footwork and throwing motion, things like that. But, you know, he's got a lot of hype coming in from Manville and being at the state championship game. So it's nice getting that, I guess, you know, selfishly, it's nice getting that spotlight for a minute.
Yeah.
Being able to bring a guy like him. And he's got size too. And he throws a pretty ball. He kind of has that Peyton Manning feet, really quick, hoppy. But he's got some time to develop. The other guy that really excites me is DeAndre Torrey. I guess all the offensive guys excite me. But DeAndre Torrey, man, he's gonna do well. I think he's gonna be great in the passing game as well. Coming out of the backfield, he's 5'7", 189. He's not huge. But man, he is explosive. Once he hits a hole,
it was from Gaudier, Mississippi. I wonder how they pronounce it there. But that looks like Gaudier to me. Yeah, Torrey, he was pretty good. He's a little scat back, 5'7", 189, like you said. And I mean, he's quick, he's fast. He looks like a guy that can make plays for us, right? And that's what you want. I like that they're getting explosive dudes. You got Jason Bean as a quarterback too. We got what, two, three quarterbacks? One, two.
Didn't we get? Yeah, we got that dual threat one. He's a preferred walk on or a walk on?
Yeah,
I can't remember his name.
So Jackson Gibbs, he's gonna be good. Kevion Davis, KD, whatever you want to call him. He's gonna be good. I like Reggie Williams. We got a lot of safeties, safety linebacker type dudes. But you know, we've seen it. We've seen guys play safety that we've seen them kind of go in and out from that position in other ones.
Depending on the set package.
Yeah, you know, the dude guys. from Denton, right? The guy we got, the Tyreek Davis.
Tyreek.
Yeah, he came in as a linebacker ish kind of dude, and he played in both positions. You like the flexibility. You like a guy that can play safety, because if he needs to run out in coverage, he can, right? And you also like a guy that's not afraid to tackle and can lay a hit on somebody, you know, even if he's not really built to do, you know, do it against the Army or something like that. I like it. All right, here, I'm going to give you Seth Luttrell's goals, and you tell me if he fulfilled these, okay? He said, offensive line, big area for us, even if we need to get a grad transfer, a JUCO kid. Quarterbacks, you got to get quarterbacks. Running back, wide receivers. Numbers are good at running back. We're going to have to get one more. We need at least two wide receivers. Defense, linebackers are a big need for us. We're signing more safeties, and we're looking for some JUCO guys along the defensive line. So, of the 19, did he fulfill that?
I don't think he fulfilled all those things. On paper, because offensive line is still a question mark.
Well, you mean in talent? Is that what you're talking about?
In terms of talent and knowing what we're getting, you know, you want to be able to compete and get, in terms of recruiting, get big names on the line. And, you know, we're not doing that. We know that we've always had lengthy discussions about what star ratings mean and who actually gets rated versus who doesn't, the types of kids and where they're going matter. But, you know, you have to have a baseline somewhere to be able to start evaluating and, you know, getting a 3-star offensive lineman means that somebody noticed this guy and said, oh, this guy is good. And you know, there's a reason they're a 3-star versus a guy that's not rated or is this 2-star. There's a reason that, you know, either they're not noticed, they're a small time guy. And, you know, I don't want to be known for ninja recruiting or whatever. I want to go out and get those highly recruited guys. And I don't know if we'll ever get to that point with this staff or if we're just going to have to continue to be stealthy.
Yeah, I mean, there's the possibility of improving the recruiting can always change with some wins. I mean, South Latrell said it was a little bit easier out there now that they were winning. We'll see. FIU won the recruiting battle this season, right? They got 2 4-star defensive tackles. They got 14 3-star dudes. Okay. We don't never know what that means. There's always a two-part to this thing. Just amassing lots of talent will get you a long way, especially in this league, but anywhere, right? Just getting a bunch of dudes out there, you can just out-talent everybody. When you run up against equally or about as talented teams, however, that execute well, you're at a disadvantage if you're just like, well, just out-talent them. We'll just give it to the running back and he'll figure it out. You know, when you have teams that put it all together, then that's when you get beat. What was amazing about Florida Atlantic was that they had a coherent coach, offensively especially, and put a lot of talent, because they got a lot of JUCO guys, a lot of transfer dudes, but they also had a lot of talent. FAU has been top 10, top half of the conference, I mean.
Yeah, they had a full roster, and it was a talented roster that the previous coaching staff didn't take advantage of.
Yeah, like a lot of them, like the center, Antonio Woods, was it Al Shaeer, the middle linebacker, they've been there for a while. Even the running backs, been there for a while. So they had like depth at running back. You know what I mean? They were not completely barren. They didn't have to make the kind of decisions that we had to make. So it's unfair to compare what Lane Kiffin did with what Seth Luttrell is doing. They were both in the conference championship game, right? Butch Davis is known for putting a lot of talent together. You know, Butch Davis has been an NFL head coach. Lane Kiffin been an NFL head coach. Seth Luttrell has been a coordinator at North Carolina. That's the highest position that he's reached. And you can make the argument that maybe coordinator at Indiana or maybe the coordinator at Arizona is about as high profile. It's just kind of a tougher sell. You can be like, well, we got this guy that used to play in the NFL right here for a little bit, Graham Harrell. You're like, oh, okay. Then it's just not as easy of a sell. So we're always going to be a little bit behind him, and that's fine.
Yeah, you have to be a quarterback and from Texas to really understand. At least appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, and everybody else they have dudes too, right? So just the immediate name recognition, and if you don't have the name recognition because you're like born in 1998, well, you have this picture. Look at this picture of me coaching the Raiders right here, kid. This could be you. I know what it takes to get to the NFL. I know what NFL talent looks like, and you just might have it, right? That's the sell right there. Or if you're Butch Davis, like, look at me here with Miami. Look at me here with the Dallas Cowboys. Don't look at me with the Browns too much, but look at me over here. You know, like, he has things to sell, and he can say the same kinds of things. I've coached in the NFL a long time. I'll coach these dudes. They came from your town. I know what it takes to be an NFL. Trust me, kid.
And you can see immediately right off the bat with Butch Davis and Lane Kiffin the kinds of coaches they are. There's a reason that they were coaching these NFL teams. There were a reason they were coaching these SEC teams or ACC teams or whatever, what have you. Versus Seth Luttrell, who's been moving it up from Arizona to North Carolina. There's a reason that Lane Kiffin is so highly regarded, a reason why Butch Davis is highly regarded, and they're bringing these guys in.
Yeah, they're a good coach. The question with them is, like, are they going to check out, or was it all on the talent? No, it turns out they're really good coaches. So All right, now we've eliminated those. The guys that we can compare ourselves to a little bit more easily are like a Doc Holliday at Marshall. He's been a longtime college coach. He's a real good coach. But, you know, you have to be really into college football to know Doc Holliday is, right? Even if you want to look at UTSA's guys or Jay Hobson and, yeah, USM. Skip Holtz is the son of a coach. He's a little bit famous, but he's, you know, he hasn't won any national championships. He hasn't been on TV a lot. You have to be really into college football to know who he is. Sonny Dykes, he has a famous name in coaching circles. That's going to go a long way with high school guys that say, yeah, his dad was a legend. He's a legend. You're going to be in good hands going that way, right? That's going to work that way. But whatever. My point about all this is that we're in a different spot. We are in a peculiar set of circumstances that are unique to us. And you have to remember that when you're evaluating these recruiting classes. Thus far, I know we say it all the time, thus far, we've done a good job identifying talent that can play in this system on offense. And you just have to turn and look and say, look at our yards per game, look at our points per game, look at how we scored so easily. And this is year two, right? You can, led by a tiny quarterback, right? Mason Fine put up numbers, won Offensive Player of the Year, Conference USA. That's great. We can do more. Can you imagine what it's going to be like next year? Can we be better, more efficient on third downs, more efficient in short yardage? Can we be more explosive in certain areas? Can we be more complete in some of these games? Because we were doing this like in two quarters, like first quarter, dominant. Fourth quarter, amazing. Second and third quarter, we weren't there. We didn't show up. Yeah, we
went to 7-Eleven, got an IC, and got a brain freeze.
Yeah, it's like, Rice, look at this touchdown. Oh, also, we threw a pick six. Also, we got sacked three straight times towards the end of the game. You know, like, we got to clean up those things. And you watch a lot of, you know, new programs, especially air raid programs. That happens. You're like, wow, look at this guy threw for 4,000 yards his first season there. And you're like, yeah, and they were, you know, 6-7. And also, he threw like 10 picks, and it was not that good. They just, it was big improvements, but it could be better. Can you imagine what it's going to look like when it just run in like a machine? And you have depth, and everybody just knows what to do and not have to look at the coach. They just like, I'm going to check out this play, run this play. Everybody's on the same page, right? Defensively, we don't know that they could do that, right? Troy Reffitt is, I think he can hang his hat on the ULM teams of, was that 2007, right? The one that...
Has it been that long?
Yeah, it's been that long. He doesn't have that same kind of reputation that Seth Luttrell has. It's not like equivalent. So there are more question marks there. And like you said...
Clock is ticking.
Yeah, clock is ticking. You got to look at it and say, what are we going to be? Some of this is the way we play. We speed it up a little bit, but we have to also do that. It's the way we're going to do it. Our best punch is our offensive punch, right? So we're going to put things to favor the offense, right? And it's going to be at the expense of the defense a little bit. That said, the defense has improved, right? Look, the numbers say that they improved a little bit. Your eyes told you that they improved a little bit. When things are right against Florida, teams that's pretty simple to defend, against even Iowa a little bit, even in certain times, believe it or not, against FAU in the conference championship game, the defense is not bad. You're like, I can see how they're just like one or two playmakers away. If they can get a linebacker that can run sideline to sideline and can – you know, bust up a play inside. I mean, Army had some dudes like that in the bowl game 2 years ago. Their linebackers were killing things. You can see them diagnosing the play. Yeah, see them diagnosing the play, shaking off a block, making a tackle. Not to knock our guys, but we don't see that as often against the good teams, right? Yeah, we did it against Rice. Okay. Are we doing it against Troy? Are we doing it against FAU? Are we doing it against the Iowas? Are we doing it against SMU, right?
Yeah, no. So we're like you were saying, yeah, we've been inconsistent. We showed up against La Tech for half the time on defense.
Yeah.
FAU half the time on defense on the conference championship game. So we're almost there. We've got I think the scheme is there. The scheme is fine. The 3-5, or sometimes it changes up 3-2-6 or whatever it is that they're throwing out there, depending on the sub packages. But I don't have a problem with that defense. It's just identifying and bringing in the talent for that defense and keeping Refitz's job. And I did have a question for you. And I've got one that I like. Did you have a guy that on defense in this class that you think would be an immediate impact, like a starter in the ball?
You know, I like Faison because he's a big linebacker. He's a JUCO guy. I feel like he's going to make some plays. But, you know, the other two linebackers from December, Jordan Hunt, Larry Nixon, I feel like they're going to get some time. Maybe spot duty, just because they're high school guys. Maybe they haven't played as much. We'll see. I don't know how well they'll take to everything. We also need some linebackers, so, you know, they might just play just because. We're like, we'll let them learn out there, you know?
Yeah.
We'll see what they do against Liberty. But I'm still intrigued, and this may be wrong, by Josh Sa'afi. I don't know why. I keep coming back to him in my brain. I'm like, I think he's going to do something. He's 6'3", 272. I think he's going to play along the line. But we drop our line sometimes. Just to kind of mix it up, and I think he's going to bring a different set of skills out there. And I don't know. I like him. Maybe wrong, but just somebody that stood out to me.
Yeah. So he's a weak side defensive end. So he may be asked to defend some of the backside plays, the running back going out on the flats. Haven't seen too much of him, but the guy that I think, and I agree with you on this one, will make my number one guy that I think will make an immediate impact this fall would be, Tim Faison. He just looks the part of a linebacker that can play right away here. A plug-and-play guy that, you know, in the context of what we currently have, will make the roster better.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what we're really missing is a pass rush, is what I'm thinking about. And I'm looking at these guys, and again, not to knock any of them, I don't know any of these dudes are going to be a first day force along the defensive line just to make plays. And hopefully, maybe we get Bryce English back one of these days. And him guarding them allows everybody to play where they need to play, where they're designed to play. And then that frees up everybody, right? It just makes everything work. Maybe that's the missing key, which is a little depressing. It's all one guy, but then it's understandable. That's what happens. One guy on the defensive line can change the game and can change everything. They're just, you look again, where are we weak? Passing downs. Clear passing downs. 3rd and 13. Why do we need to bring 50 guys to get pressure? Because we can't get pressure. It's like the worst situation. We can't get pressure with our line. At least not the kind of pressure that will cause a turnover or force an incompletion. And so they had acres of space, hours of time to find and pick out a dude wide open. There he is, first down. So we're like, damn it. Okay, let's bring the house, right? Let's bring 5-6 guys in here and see if we can get pressure on this dude. And they say, cool, we'll block that up, turn, throw a completion, right? Troy did that to us. SMU did that to us.
UTSA.
UTSA, they said, max protect. I have time. Also, they have a quarterback that can run around. And they threw a wheel route against us, right? Because we just had one guy, linebacker, guarding him out the back. But, I mean, Troy had a lot of time to play action. And when they did that, I mean, that Brandon Silvers had all day to throw. And I know everybody's, like, knocking Eric Jenkins for getting ate up by that dude. But what is he supposed to do, you know? Like, we were bringing the house on a couple of plays. Or we were just leaving him. They just schemed us up bad, and then we couldn't get to the quarterback. What are you gonna do? Nothing.
Yeah, I'm not gonna blame Eric Jenkins on any of that. He got beat only one time, and the rest of the time they were just out routes. They ran out route after out route, and there's only so much you can do when both the quarterback and the wide receiver are having the best game of their careers.
Yeah, and then I mean the other part of it is that we couldn't stop everybody else.
Right.
The running game, so they had easy times. So, I mean, yeah, we need to get somebody to the quarterback. Josh Wheeler, when he was healthy and he was feeling good, was that dude. But even then, he was not a Marcus Davenport from UTSA, right? And again, Marcus Davenport was a beanpole when he came in. They developed him. He turned into a force. So any of these guys could be that story, and that's what we want. But right now we're looking at finished products that maybe don't have the same kind of ceiling. Darian McMillan, JUCO guy. Who's the other guy? The defensive line. Saafi, same kind of deal. JUCO guy. You're hoping for something there, somebody to change the game. Again, we're getting 3-4 guys, kind of all maybe have some weaknesses. Like, he's great, but he maybe doesn't have the kind of motor. I like the guy Shaw. He has a motor. This guy's he's big and strong. Maybe he doesn't have the speed. Who knows? We can get by with a solid defense. Just a solid defense, not particularly great in any one area. That would be fine. We were very weak defensively on passing downs. Look, first and second down, like top third in the nation. Fourth down, third and fourth down, bottom five in the nation. It was awful.
Yeah, we just need that one guy on the defensive line that can disrupt the passing game. That's all we're asking for. If that's too much to ask, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, one time like that, just one or two times a game. And if you don't believe, you're just like, what are you guys talking about? You guys sound like crazies. Look at the Super Bowl, right? The most high-profile football game everybody saw. What happened? You're like, man, Philly got sliced up for 505 yards passing. Tom Brady had all day. He did until he didn't, right? Until, was it Barnett or Graham, whoever it was, that hit him. Caused him to fumble. Philly takes an 8-point lead. And essentially seals the game, right? I thought Tom Brady was going to slice him up, go down in his court, another touchdown, and Philly was going to have to rely on their offense to go down and win the game. As it happened, they didn't. Defense won the game.
Play.
All it took is one play. All you need is one timely pass rush to change the game. And that's an extreme example. One of the best football teams in the country, in the league, obviously the Patriots are great. But that's you need one of those. If you look at our highlights this season, it was a lot of offensive highlights. Against Old Dominion, we had three straight third and fourth and one stops. That was pretty great, but we didn't see a whole lot of that against the really good teams. Florida Atlantic, Troy, as we said, SMU. Those three teams were pretty good. Those three teams had competent offensive schemes. And yeah, like SMU, Chad Morris is a good offensive coordinator, a good game planner. Florida Atlantic, we talked about that. Troy, Neil Brown, great offensive coordinator. He knows how to coach offense. All three of those kicked their asses because they had great game plans against our defense because they just saw opportunity and took advantage of it. And that's the way you're supposed to do it. Like, they have a weak spot where we're going to go 100% on their weak spot, and that's going to destroy them. So we need to not have such obvious weak spots, is the point. I like this class. It's not going to be highly rated, but they're not going to really be relied upon next season. It's going to be the other guys, a couple of JUCO guys here and there.
Yeah, I'm not going to overreact and say it could be better, but it could be better. I've got confidence in the staff in, one, identifying talent, and two, developing talent. And then they've given us enough examples that they've been able to do that, at least on offense. So I'm not giving them the benefit of the doubt on defense, but I think they are going to turn that around this season.
Yeah, I mean, the other part of it is like, hey, look, they've been able to get guys. They are able to identify defensive dudes. Some of the problem on defense has been bad luck, right? We wanted Bryce English. He was going to be the new Damonte Hood, who was pretty solid. He was pretty good. Bryce English was going to be that plus a little bit more, maybe even the same thing. Then he gets hurt. Okay, bad luck. We looked for, was it Ravion Hostin, and then the other guy, was it Williams, linebacker?
Yeah.
We're like, please, these guys are talented. Who knows what they're going to bring? Both of them didn't make it. So what? But we got two cornerbacks that were integral to the success of this team. In the last year, Eric Jenkins and what's his face on the other side? Can't even think of his name right now. I'm terrible.
Yeah, because he had Nate Brooks and Eric Jenkins and
yeah, I'm awful. I'm awful.
This, The worst Mean Green Nation podcast ever.
Yeah, what's that guy in North Texas? What's his name? I can't even think about it right now. I'm awful. I've been thinking about too much about basketball.
Kimon Hall.
Yes, Kimon Hall. Two of them came late in the summer. They sign. They become starters, right? And, you know, Eric Jenkins was one of the best cornerbacks that we've had here in the past couple of seasons. He had some bad moments, but he was at least as good as Nate Brooks on some of his worst days. And he was pretty great when he was on, you know. Eric Jenkins.
I mean, when he started back up against UAB when they benched Nate Brooks, I mean, three passes in a row, I think, or maybe not even a row, but he was just in that play, laying out and, you know, defending those passes.
Yeah.
He was a difference maker.
Yeah. Not only that, he did that at a moment when we had like lower confidence because Nate Brooks got beat like on three straight pump and goes. Even Kimon Hall did, but that got called back. But, you know, those all, we were not feeling really good. They tried it again on Eric Jenkins, and he got like two pass breakups or three incompletions and like two pass breakups. And one of them he dove and knocked it away. That was huge to win that game. Eric Jenkins, Kimon Hall play really well. These guys, I mean, the staff knows talent when they see it. And they've done their best. I just think they haven't been as lucky on defense. And, you know, maybe Hostin comes in and he like changes game. Maybe he doesn't. Who knows, right? All I'm saying is that you don't know. That's the problem when you take a high risk dude like that. And I wrote about this on Mean Green Nation. Like, we've taken some gambles and they haven't paid off. In other areas, I don't say we've taken gambles, but you know, we haven't had the injuries. We hadn't, like, Mason Fine has been able to play. I think you can say we miss on Alec Morris. That's a big swing and a miss. And again, there's a kind of like, hey, we have a month of signing day. There's a Jugo guy who wants to play. He can throw it around a little bit. Let's bring him in here. I don't know that we bring in Alec Morris right now, you know? I don't know that we say, yeah, right, let's bring him in. That's a swing and a miss when you have a month to go, right? But Graham Harrell, the story is when he came into the team, he had an assistant say, give me all the stats of everybody that's good here in Texas right now, right? That was his recruiting strategy a month ago. Who has the numbers? You know what I mean? Let's see it. We'll start there. Now I'm sure it's different. Like, he knows who's good. He's identifying people. He's watching stuff. He has a little bit better of a system going on than let's just bring the numbers up, you know?
Which is not
a terrible place to start, but it's still, it's not as in depth and thorough. I'm crossing my fingers right now. Here's hoping the defense looks amazing. Let's read too much into it.
Here's hoping that the defense looks average.
Yeah, average. I'm gonna cross my fingers and say, yeah, let's read too much into the spring game performance of the defense. How about that? We'll just make grand proclamations based on whatever happens there. I think that'd be ideal, and we'll make everybody angry. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Mean Green Nation Podcast. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. I listen to Bomani Jones sometimes. He says subscribe and it bothers me. It's subscribe. Please subscribe to Mean Green Nation Podcast. And I guess, go, Aldo, you did something the other day with the RB Scout. You want to talk about that for a little bit?
Oh, yeah. So the other thing I do is at the RB Scout on Twitter, we went to this training facility called APEC in Fort Worth, APEC. And what they do is they bring in, I don't know if it's connected to agents or whatever, but they've got guys, NFL vets and NFL draft prospects. Like, they've got Pat Mahomes, Josh Boykin, a whole bunch of dudes training there. But then they've also got, you know, Keyshawn McClain is there. They've got Malik Jefferson, Puna Ford. So all these draft hopefuls training there. And we got the opportunity to go and interview them. It was kind of like a pre-combine interview training because they're going to be grilled by scouts and whatnot. And they needed this practice. And we went out there to talk to them. We've got the interviews up on YouTube, on the RB Scout YouTube channel. But it was a fun experience talking to these guys. They were, you know, we put these guys on a pedestal. They're these NFL draft prospects, but they were super fun to talk to, really humble. Will Richardson from NC State. He's an offensive tackle, probably my favorite guy there that day. And it was fun to talk to Keyshawn McClain. I did ask him about linebackers in that situation there. but, you know, it was first time I've did that, and it was a lot of fun. Hopefully y'all take a listen to it.
Yeah, do that. Do that, guys. Shout out to the basketball team. Playing Middle Tennessee State really well. Best team in the conference. Shout out to the women's team. Back-to-back wins in Florida, which we kind of expected, but Terrielle Bradley, she had, was it 32 points? She had 40-something points the other day. Hit 9 threes. She was killing it. She didn't need to do that much last game. They kind of handled FAU pretty easily. North Texas, the women's basketball team, is going to make the tournament, it looks like, just with these back-to-back wins there. They just got to handle their business. The men's team, depending on what Marshall does, I think Marshall won yesterday. They have a big battle coming up against Marshall in Denton. That's going to be huge because the fourth seed is what everybody wants. It's what we want. The conference tournament is like, if you don't get a bye in the first, get one of the top four seeds, if you don't get a bye, then you have to win 4 games in 4 days. And that is awful because it's not even 24 hours exactly. Sometimes it's like 18 hours later. So you're done playing, you maybe rest, then you got to get ready to play again. And for a team like ours that plays like a handful of guys, a lot of minutes, that's going to be tough. And you don't want tough. You want the easiest road. Get a bye, you know, rest up, get an easy blowout win against a team that's tired. Maybe had to play in overtime in the first game. Then who knows what could happen. But yeah, Roosevelt Smart playing really well. DJ Draper, the walk-on. Playing really well. I've been really busy, so me and Greg haven't been able to link up and do our basketball podcast during the week, so apologies there. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll try to do another one soon, talking about football. Go Mean Green.
Go Mean Green.